Welcome to a discussion of Ayn Rand's radical fundamental principles of freedom. Objectivist perspective on rational self-interest, laissez-faire capitalism, and individual rights. Yaron Brook, Executive Director of the Ayn Rand Institute, invites you to the conversation. The Yaron Brook Show starts now on AM 560, The Answer.
You know, we live in a completely insane, crazy world, but I had a good week. I had a good week last week. My new book, Equal is Unfair, came out. It was published on Tuesday. We did a big event in New York City to celebrate the publication. I was all over the East Coast doing events related to the book. The week before that, of course, I was in Chicago with events related to the pre-publication of the book. Hopefully many of you have the book already. If you haven't, go buy it. What are you waiting for? It's available on Amazon. It's a little bit more difficult to find it in your local bookstores. They're kind of struggling to keep up with the demand. The book is doing very well. And so go to Barnes & Noble and bang on the table. Tell them you want a copy and make them order some if they don't have any in stock. Or go to your local little neighborhood bookstore and get them to carry the book. But you can always get it on Amazon, and the cool thing about Amazon is you can get it instantaneously, right? You can download it onto your Kindle, onto your iPad, onto your, whatever device you use, and that is the cheapest option, and I think the coolest option. I read all my books on the Kindle. I try to avoid hardback copy books. They're too cumbersome to carry around. I can carry my entire library on my iPad. It's so cool. So cool. All right, you're listening to Yaron Brook Show. And together with my co-author, Don Watkins, last Tuesday, we published Equal is Unfair, America's Misguided Fight Against Income Inequality. You've heard me talk on the show many times about the issue of income inequality, and we will continue to talk about this issue. Not because I want to talk about this issue so much as because, you know, it's in the news constantly. Everything's about income inequality these days. They come up with new schemes all the time, new ways in which to formulate this thing. Now, I want to talk today about minimum wages and its relationship to income inequality and just the insanity of the whole world raising minimum wages, not even just California and New York and the city of Chicago. We've got Germany. We've got Japan. We've got England, the UK, the Great Britain, just raised their minimum wage as well. I want to talk about why I think that's insane, why I think it's a bad, bad policy, and you know, what's wrong with it, really get into the details. But before that, I saw this story, and I just have to comment on it because it's related to Chicago. Now, we also broadcast in Miami, but still, you know, this is mainly a Chicago state Chicago show, but this is relevant to the entire world. This is a beautiful, beautiful story about income. Hysteria over income inequality gone crazy, and the lengths to which people are willing to go in order to eliminate, in order to reduce the problems of income inequality. Now, every day you can open up the newspapers and find this issue of inequality right there in the paper. It's now blamed for every problem we have in the world. I mean, I'm waiting for them to blame cancer on income inequality or wealth inequality, or I heard a new concept today, total inequality. It takes wealth and income and social inequality and educational inequality, all these things, and it's a total inequality. Anyway, inequality, the gap between those who have and those who haven't, is the problem in our lives. And as I said, I've written a whole book addressing these issues because the left has made this a big deal. Obama, the Pope, and the right has no answer to them. I don't hear anybody on the right actually addressing this issue. And that includes all the presidential candidates who are running right now. I haven't heard a single one of them say anything intelligent about this issue of inequality. Well, all I have to say is, hey, people, equal is unfair. Fairness demands inequality because we're different. We have different skills, different ability, different talents. We produce differently. We make different. We create different amounts of wealth. So we should be different. The outcome should be different. If the inputs are different, the output's going to be different. Freedom is what we should be maximizing. Anyway, this is a story about a couple of Chicago professors. They wrote this article. Let's see, where was it published? It's an opinion piece. I can't tell right now. Oh, Chicago Business. ChicagoBusiness.com. Just go to ChicagoBusiness.com. Anyway, two professors from two public universities in the city of Chicago. I think is one is at, anyway, I'm not sure where they are. Doesn't matter. The point is this. So they're complaining, right? They're complaining that Chicago State University has fired a bunch of staff. Northeastern Illinois University has got mandatory furloughs, which are significant. So a lot of the public university system in Illinois right now is struggling. It's not a surprise, given that you guys don't have a budget, that Illinois has no budget, and that there's a big fight between the governor and the state house. A fight, by the way, that I'm completely on the side of the governor on, and he should shut the state down until the legislature caves, from my perspective. But what's interesting is so the public schools are suffering because there's less funding, and generally, you know, Illinois is bankrupt. It can't afford to pay all these university professor salaries. That's just life. That's just the way it is. But this is what really upsets the professors. It's not so much that they're suffering. They're suffering, okay, you know, that's bad. But what really upsets them, I was going to say a bad word, really gets them going, is that the University of Chicago, a private university, one of the great institutions in the United States, a bastion, used to be at least, of free market economics, that the University of Chicago, at the same time as these cuts were announced, announced a $35 million gift from a founder of an investment firm to establish a new think tank to research urban issues. Now, let's put aside my view about giving money to your university, particularly giving money to university without really, really, really ropes attached, not even strings attached, ropes attached. Maybe we'll talk about that. Maybe we won't. But they're really upset that they're getting cut. And University of Chicago is getting all this money. They also received, University of Chicago, $10 million from the Pritzker family to fund urban labs that are going to support, you know, research into so-called big challenges that cities face. So what really upsets them is the inequality between public universities that rely on tax money and therefore, you know, there's only so much you can take from people by force in order to give to universities, so they're somewhat constrained. And private universities that primarily rely on making money off tuition, but not really not. Most of what they rely on is on, you know, rich people giving them huge amounts of money. They call this, they've actually called it, they called what the private universities are doing wealth hoarding. So what they're upset about is that these universities have tons of money. Like, the University of Chicago has a $7.5 billion endowment. And they say, how can this be? This is wrong. This is evil. This is immoral. There are all these students who are not getting an education. At a time, they say, at a time of rising inequality, school foundations have to shrink, not widen. How dare they take in more money? How dare they invest that money? Why aren't they spending it? They need to spend it. And ideally, they say, it's not just spend it on their own institutions. We need to redistribute this money. We need to take the money from the University of Chicago and give the money to Northeastern Illinois University, right? Not Northwestern University in Chicago, Northeastern Illinois University, which is some university in Illinois, right? Or Illinois State University, or any of these public institutions, or even the University of Illinois. Take the money from the University of Chicago and give it to them. They're struggling. They don't have any money. And we know it's right to redistribute wealth. They say there's enough wealth to go around. The problem is how we disperse the wealth, how we allocate it, how we distribute it. So we should take the money from the endowment at the University of Chicago, give it to all these other universities. But they say, you know, this is going to be tough. This is going to be tough for the universities to do. How, you know, it's a private university. How are we going to take the money of this private university? We could pass a law, I guess. But a lot of people would get upset. So they say there's a better solution to this. What we should do is nationalize these universities. I'm not kidding. This is in the article. Or better yet, I'm quoting, why not nationalize the private universities, all private universities, Harvard, Yale, all of these, Stanford, so that all students in Chicago from all communities can benefit from their excellent resources. I wonder how excellent those resources would be if they were privatized. What would happen to the quality of education if they were nationalized? What would happen to the quality of education at the University of Chicago if it was turned into a government institution like Northeastern Illinois University? You think it would still be of that quality? So this is the call. This is what it's all about at the end of the day. The whole inequality debate boils down to this. What they want to do is nationalize, take over, steal the wealth of those who have to give it to those who don't have. And with that, you're listening to your Ron Brooks Show. When we get back, we'll talk more about this and we'll talk about the minimum wage, and I will take your calls.
How can you get from here to there? We've got the answer from the North State Steel Traffic Center.
I'm Paul Bodenloss with a look at the roadways. On the inbound Edens, it's pretty heavy. Lake Hook to the junction takes about 21 minutes. Kennedy heading inbound slows down between River Road and Canfield. Also tap the brakes between Central and the Circle. O'Hare to downtown is 33 minutes. From the junction takes 20. Outbound lanes heavy between Addison and Canfield. Downtown to the junction 14. To O'Hare 32, express lanes are okay. Inbound Eisenhower, Thorndale to the post office, 34 minutes. From Mannheim takes about 21. The inbound Stevenson, 355 to Lakeshore Drive is 35 minutes. From the Tri-State takes 25. Inbound Dan Ryan, heavy between the Stevenson and Circle, 19 minutes. 95th to downtown, express lanes are heavy inbound between 31st and the Stevenson. Tonight, 29 in windy. Tomorrow, 61 in windy. Currently, it's 36 degrees. Next update in 15 minutes on AM 560, The Answer.
The real Donald Trump wants to take legal action against women who've had abortions.
Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson.
He changed his position three different times.
He has given zero thought to these issues. He has no idea what he's talking about.
He cannot walk this back enough. He cannot do anything to repair the damage that he has caused.
I'd like to see at least a little effort made. Know something about that of which you speak.
Start your day with Chicago's Morning Answer. Weekday mornings starting at 5 on AM 560. The Answer.
Ayn Rand was a radical thinker whose philosophical novels challenged students to reconsider their views on fundamental issues. The Fountainhead, Atlas Shrugged, and Anthem. These works have become classics of American literature that never fail to engage young people and stimulate intense classroom discussion. By offering these works for free to teachers, the Ayn Rand Institute hopes to encourage greater awareness and understanding of Rand's stimulating perspective. If you're a teacher who would like Ayn Rand's books in your classroom, visit AynRand.org. This is at no cost to you. Go to AynRand.org today.
Somewhere in America, at just this moment as you sit listening to this radio show, there's a young person waiting to discover Ayn Rand's novels, waiting to have his or her life changed by the beauty of Ayn Rand's art and the logic of her ideas. Through ARI's Free Books to Teachers program, we have delivered more than 3 million copies of Ayn Rand's books to schools in every state. You can help us reach young minds today. Make your tax-deductible contribution now at AynRand.org/support.
Raj Shah, host of Secure Retirement Radio.
I believe not only in protecting your retirement and making the growth going forward, but also having a tax-efficient retirement as well, because you want your retirement portfolios to generate an income stream that will last for your life, for your spouse's life, and if you have kids, that will pass on to the next generation as well.
Tune in for Secure Retirement Radio with Raj Shah, Sunday mornings at 7 here on AM 560, The Answer.
Hey, Steve. Steve Harvey here. Now, I've been told I know a thing or two about surveys, but I was really interested to learn the answers the Illinois Emergency Management Agency gave when asked to name the top five items every Illinois family needs to have in their home's emergency disaster kit: water, non-perishable food, a weather radio, and of course, a first aid kit. There's no need for a family to feud over what to include in your kit. Get the answers at ready.illinois.gov.
Sponsored by the Illinois Emergency Management Agency, aired in cooperation with the Illinois Broadcasters Association and this station.
Intrigued, inspired, and possibly even angered. Welcome back to the Yaron Brooks Show on AM 560, The Answer.
So you see, this is why I wrote a book about this topic. The book is called Equal is Unfair, because it's nutty what these people want to do, these people that are advocating that inequality is such a big problem. and that in the name of inequality, because somebody else has more than you, it's okay to steal their stuff, to take their stuff. Think about it. University of Chicago, which is one of the great universities of this country, has a lot of alumni. And partially because of the great education they got at the University of Chicago, they've made a lot of money. And they want to contribute to the university. Now, I have my doubts about giving money to universities, because I view universities today as the enemy, the source of all the bad ideas. This is why Bernie Sanders and is you know, so popular, so successful, because he's basically mouthing back to the students what their professors have been telling them forever. So I have a certain rejection of the idea of giving any money to your alma mater. I really think that if you want to save America, starve those universities, including those private universities. But still, it's your money. You can do whatever the hell you want with it. And the fact is that some of the alma mater have chosen to give the University of Chicago a lot of money. Good for them. Well, I guess. And the University of Chicago has accumulated $7.5 billion in an endowment, which they've invested, and they get a return, and they spend a certain amount, and they have this amount of money so that if anything ever happens in the future, you know, they have the money for it. But these bastards, if I can call them bastards, I can call them bastards. I think on the radio that's okay. They just want to steal the $7.5 billion. They want to take it and redistribute it to second- and third-rate universities. And some good ones. University of Illinois, Champaign, I'm sure it's a good university. Engineering department is good. Business school is pretty good. But by what right? Some people are hurting and some people are successful. This is the problem in the world today. We think that because you're hurting, you have a right to steal from those who are successful. You have a moral claim against their wealth and a political claim. You can go out and just take their money. And this is, you know, to say, as these authors say, why not nationalize the private universities? Talk about socialism. Not Bernie Sanders socialism. Worst. Bernie Sanders has not yet proposed nationalizing anything. He knows that's a losing proposition. All right. We got Sean. It's always a pleasure to hear from Sean. Hey, Sean, how are you doing this week?
Well, good, good. I you know, one of my favorite sayings is that the chosen weapon of the tyrant is the shield of virtue, which allows them to do virtually anything because they claim it's to right a wrong, to help somebody Absolutely. Who has less. But your comment on the University of Chicago, I used to think it was great as well. I mean, Milton Friedman, the Chicago Eight, they turned sure. around Chile. Yeah. And then somewhere between then and now, we now employ Bill Ayers. We now give cover to David Axelrod's front group. So I don't think it's sure. great anymore. I think it's an example of a socialist coup d'état of our education system, unlike
you
any
know what
other.
Happened? And this, you know what happened in Chicago is that the left demanded diversity of ideas because it was so dominated by kind of Chicago school economists trained by Milton Friedman, and the left came in and said, "Hey, wait a minute, we demand you know diversity, and we demand academic freedom," and they slowly started hiring leftists into the economics and into the business school. And today, the University of Chicago is not that much better than any other university in terms of the kind of ideas, because once the left gets a foothold in there, they shut the right out. They don't want diversity. They just want to dominate.
Well, you're right. I think that's possible, but I also think it's simultaneous with, and I know it's organized crime moving into politics. Politics is now organized crime. And what they did is they knew if they seized the power of a university or any other group for that matter, they could mm-hmm. use it as a front, as a money laundering scheme. Who are the employees of the University of Chicago? And I'm talking about the janitors and the bus drivers. These are all very politically connected people, which is why they get those jobs. They guarantee that they will continue to vote for the despot of choice, whoever Mayor Daley or at that time that was the family, chooses to hand the oligarchy down to. And sure. you have these universities sure. that have become nothing, but they're infiltrated with politically connected employees, constantly securing that the powers that be stay in power, and then get these ridiculous packages, these employment packages, and they use the magical words of pensions. Would you rather sure. be a small-time shop owner around the University of Chicago or one of the bus drivers who retires with a pension that mirrors an investment banker?
Well, and if a professor, you get tenure and you get forever. I disagree a little bit because I think there's a little bit of putting the cart before the horse here. I think it's the universities that corrupt politics. I think the real mafia is the intellectuals at the universities, the professors. They're the ones who really dominate. They're the ones who train the politicians, train the employees, consult. They're the ones who create the political mafia.
Now,
Chicago's a little different because you had the dailies. But generally in the world out there, the real devil is at the universities.
We can call them the capos, then. We'll call them the capos. And as you see in Chicago, you see the teacher unions parade around, and they say it's for the kids to save the schools. And really, what are they doing? They've cut these ridiculous deals with politicians as they sat around and had coffee and laughed because they knew that whatever corrupt deal they would give, the people would underwrite. That's why a union is never audited, because it's nothing more than a money laundering scheme. What does it do with its contributions that the teachers give? They give 90% of it out to campaign contributions.
Yep.
90%, because they know
these are political instruments.
As long as the politician okays the contract, they get the deal. There is no organized crime anymore. Forget about it. They're not guys in smoky social halls with vowels on their name. They're called politicians and union bosses. That's the organized crime of our era.
And they have the rule of law behind them, and they can
investigating themselves. They'll never. We're going to have to tear the whole system apart, Iran. So, absolutely. Once again, I come to the conclusion of storming the castle. I'll pick you up at 3:30. You take care of yourself.
Sounds good. I'm with you. Thanks, Sean. Always a pleasure. All right, we got Steve on the line. Hey, Steve. Leftists subverted the universities. How come?
Yes. Hello.
Hey, Steve.
Yes, go ahead.
You're on the Iran Book Show. Go ahead. You call.
Yes, good afternoon, Iran. Basically, I just wanted to add on the comment of the caller how well the Alinskyite tactics have worked at dominating and subverting the universities and indoctrinating a lot of the youth there unknowingly.
Oh, absolutely. But I don't think it's unknowingly. I mean, it's the parents should all know, because when you send your kid to university, you can get a list of the school books that they use. You can see exactly what they're studying and who the teachers are and what the political and philosophical affiliation of those teachers. And for the last 100 years, systematically, the left has taken over the universities to the point where today 80%+ of all professors at universities affiliate left and radical left, many of them. So this is not subversive. This is not hidden. This is out in the open. Everybody can see it, and it's your responsibility as a parent to, you know, you're sending your kid into this brainwashing attempt by the left. They're going to attempt to brainwash your kid. You know, be prepared.
Yes, absolutely. I see it down to the high school level as well.
Guess who trains the high school teachers? High school teachers all get trained by the university professors. Guess who trains our media people? They all get trained at the universities. Guess who trains our politicians? They get trained at the university. These university professors have their hand in everything, because they have their hand on what's important in a culture, which is ideas.
Ideas, yes, and it's one-sided. I guess that ties in with the free
Very
speech.
So.
You agree? It's great, First Amendment, but when you don't, they shut you down for it, and they're doing rather well at it. I'm sorry.
Well, they're
see.
Killing the First Amendment on campuses, absolutely, because they don't want opposition. They want to dominate the discussion, because they know they'll lose if they really get serious opposition.
Yes, absolutely. I have a nephew who goes to ASU, and his values, how he was raised, are different now. And I guess he wants to make the world a better place, but how he's doing it, I don't think he quite sees the end result.
you know, socialism, the agenda of the left has never, ever, ever, ever made the world a better place. What makes the world a better place is free markets, capitalism, and it's business. Business creates the jobs. Business creates the wealth. America became a great country not because of social responsibility, not because of charity, not because of community service. America became a great country because of profit-seeking businessmen who built industry, built the infrastructure, that built the jobs, created the wealth that has made this country a great country. So you create founding fathers, you create a political system, and then the entrepreneurs and the businessmen who take advantage of that political system, in a sense, take advantage of the freedom it allows them to create wealth. That's how you make the world a better place. Steve, thank you for calling. Really appreciate it. Keep on listening to your Iran Book Show. When we get back, we're going to talk about the insanity of all these new minimum wage laws. You're listening to the Ron Brooks Show.
The battle for the Republican nomination is racing towards the convention this summer in Cleveland.
Nobody is going to have enough delegates. We are going to go to a convention. It's going to be open.
Can Trump be stopped?
The only campaign that has beaten Donald Trump and the only campaign that can beat Donald Trump is this campaign.
Will there be a third party run?
Donald Trump is a phony, a fraud.
What happens next?
We should make it pretty easily based on what I'm seeing.
Happens here.
So we won't have to worry about fighting at a convention.
This is AM 560. The answer.
Fox News Radio, I'm Karen McHugh. Presidential politicking in Wisconsin this weekend. Ohio Governor John Kasich spoke in Janesville of taking care of those in need.
We are also helping people who live in the shadows, people like the mentally ill, who I don't think ought to live under a bridge or be in prison, or the drug addicted, or the developmentally disabled, or the working poor. We try to make sure that everyone rises.
Wisconsin holds its Democratic and Republican primaries this Tuesday. Democrat Bernie Sanders told a crowd in Eau Claire not to worry about questions surrounding his electability.
Let me tell you that the last CNN poll had us 20 points ahead of Donald Trump.
Recent polls also show Sanders leading Hillary Clinton in Wisconsin. Tipping off tonight in the NCAA College Basketball Final Four, North Carolina versus Syracuse and Villanova versus Oklahoma. Fox News, we report, you decide.
Stuck in traffic? We've got the answer from the North State Steel Traffic Center.
I'm Paul Bodenlos with a look at the roadways. Solid delays on Lakeshore Drive southbound between Monroe and Roosevelt. Northbound is solid between 18th Drive and Jackson Drive. Also a little slow between Grand Avenue and Chicago Avenue. On the Dan Ryan heading inbound, it's heavy between the Stevenson Expressway and the Burns Circle Interchange. 19 minutes from 95th to downtown. Express lanes heading inbound are pretty heavy between 31st and the Stevenson. Inbound Stevenson from 355 to Lakeshore Drive is 35 minutes. From the Tri-State, it takes 25. The outbound lanes from Lakeshore Drive to the Tri-State, 30. Out to 355 takes 40 minutes. Outbound Eisenhower, pretty heavy. Post office to Mannheim is 25. Out to Thorndale takes about 38 minutes. Looking at temperatures tonight, 29 and windy. Tomorrow, 61 and windy. Currently, it's 36 degrees. Next update in 15 minutes on AM 560, The Answer.
When The Fountainhead was first published more than 70 years ago, Ayn Rand's bold literary vision and groundbreaking philosophy of individualism captured the world's attention. Initially rejected by 12 publishers as too intellectual, the novel became an instant classic and continues to provoke heated debates. What motivates a creative thinker? Is it a selfless desire to benefit mankind, a hunger for fame, fortune, and accolades, the need to prove superiority, or is it a self-sufficient drive to pursue a creative vision independent of others' needs or opinions? Ayn Rand addresses these questions through her portrayal of Howard Rourke, an innovative architect who, as she puts, struggles for the integrity of his creative work against every form of social opposition. It's also the story of his love affair with a woman who seeks to defeat him. The Fountainhead is as relevant today as it was when Rand first penned it. The novel was also a personal landmark for Rand. In Howard Rourke, she presented for the first time the uniquely Ayn Rand hero, man as he could be and ought to be. Order your copy today at Amazon.com. The Ayn Rand Institute campus is an exciting online destination offering free e-courses on Ayn Rand and her revolutionary philosophy of objectivism. Whether you recently picked up your first Rand book or have been reading her novels and nonfiction for years, ARI Campus has something for you. On campus, you'll discover a variety of multimedia courses covering Rand's literary classics, specific aspects of thought, and how to apply her ideas to your life. Get started today at campus.aynrand.org. See you on campus.
Ayn Rand was a radical thinker whose philosophical novels challenged students to reconsider their views on fundamental issues. The Fountainhead, Atlas Shrugged, and Anthem. These works have become classics of American literature that never fail to engage young people and stimulate intense classroom discussion. By offering these works for free to teachers, the Ayn Rand Institute hopes to encourage greater awareness and understanding of Rand's stimulating perspective. If you're a teacher who would like Ayn Rand's books in your classroom, visit AynRand.org. This is at no cost to you. Go to AynRand.org today.
Running a business is tough these days. From a president who claimed that
you didn't build that, somebody else made that happen.
To the mountains and mountains of taxes and regulations here in Illinois. But many companies, big and small, have persevered, serving their customers and communities. If that's you and your business,
then AM 560 The Answer wants to celebrate your success and tell your story. It's the AM 560 Business Tour 2016, presented by Signature Bank. This spring, Chicago's Morning Answer with Ann Proft and Amy Jacobson will be broadcasting live from businesses in Illinois with success stories of overcoming the odds and thriving in spite of the challenging business environment. If your company fits this description, then we want to know about it so we can consider broadcasting from your location. Tell us your story. Visit 560theanswer.com/business and submit your information. That's 560theanswer.com/business. Sponsored in part by Flex Execs Management Solutions.
No traditional conservative view, nor the standard libertarian ones. Welcome back to the discussion of Ayn Rand's radical fundamental principles of freedom. This is the Yaron Brook Show on AM 560, The Answer.
So it seems like no day or week goes by without news stories related to the whole inequality alarmist nonsense. Now, I wrote a book about this. Equal is unfair. You can pick it up pretty much anywhere, but Amazon's probably the best place. Quick, easy, and you can get it on the Kindle. Instant gratification. I love that. So, yeah, go on and get it. I think you'll really enjoy it, and you'll really learn a lot about the left's attempt to use the debate about income inequality basically to take over our economy, basically to try to equal us out, to impose on us, to take from those who have, like the University of Chicago, and give to those who haven't on a scale that really America has never seen before. And this is why, you know, Bernie Sanders' campaign is so popular and is being so effective. It's because there are so many people out there, so many people out there who have bought in to the left's agenda, to the left story. And it's time to say no. You know, it's time to reject it because it's an evil agenda. The idea of making us all equal is an evil idea. We're not equal. We're different. We're different. We have different abilities, different skills, work hard, don't work hard. You know, some create wealth. Some have a talent to create wealth and others don't. And that's okay. It's just the way it is. But the fact that you don't have something like these universities in Illinois doesn't give you a right to take from those who do have something like the University of Chicago. If they have wealth, it's theirs. That's what private property means. That's what life means. That's what freedom means. But we are approaching a world in which freedom doesn't matter anymore. Inequality is what matters. What matters is that we overcome inequality. The hell with freedom. Now that is a very, very scary world. And but it's where we're heading. And the news this week is primarily being from. For minimum wage from the state of California. The state of California has now increased its minimum wage to $15. So we used to have a minimum wage here in California of about $10, and now the minimum wage is going to go over the next, you know, they've spaced it out kind of until 2022, I think. Slow increments. They're going to increase the minimum wage. And why are they increasing the minimum wage? This is what's happening all over the world and all over the United States. They're doing it in the name of income inequality. The rich are getting richer at the expense, they claim, of the poor. So the only way to compensate the poor is by doing what? Well, it's by artificially raising their wages. By artificially raising the wages of the poor. And how do you do that? Well, one way to do that is by increasing the minimum wage. All right. Now, California is raising it to 15. Now, what would happen? What is the logic of a minimum wage? How does a minimum wage actually work? So, employers now are not allowed to pay less than whatever the minimum wage is set. In Chicago, I know, you guys are now setting it to 15, right? And at 15 bucks an hour, so if I want to work, if I'm a young kid and I, you know, I want to work for, I don't know, $5 an hour, $10 an hour. The government steps in and said, no, we don't allow you to work for that low of an amount. So the government is imposing itself. And this is true of any minimum wage. I don't care if it's $7. I don't care if it's $15. I mean, just put my cards on the table. I believe the only legitimate minimum wage is zero. Only zero. Because it's none of your business how much I charge for my labor. If I'm willing to work for $3 an hour, why is it your business? If I'm willing to work for $10 an hour, why is it your business? If I'm willing to work for only for $100 an hour, otherwise I stay home, as long as you're not subsidizing me, why is it your business? It's none of your business how much money I am willing to work for, or not willing to work for in my day, in my job. So if I and the employer can come to a deal about a particular wage level, why are you interfering? Why are you getting in the middle? Why is this a role for the government? It isn't, and it shouldn't be. Government has no business in setting wages. Maximum wages, minimum wages, sideway wages, I don't care. It has no business setting wages. That is a job for the employee and the employer. If you want to start a union as an employee, start a union and negotiate wages with the union if you're too afraid to do it by yourself. But the government has no role here. And of course, when the government gets into the business of setting wages, what happens? It messes stuff up. So if you raise the minimum wage to 15, some people are going to suffer. Some people are going to suffer significantly. And that's what we're going to talk about after the break. We're going to talk about what minimum wages do, high minimum wages in particular, do to the economy, and why they're such a bad idea economically. You're listening to the Ron Brooks Show.
How can you get from here to there? We've got the answer from the North State Steel Traffic Center.
I'm Paul Bodenloss with a look at the roadways. On the inbound Edens from Lake Cook to the junction, it's about 22 minutes. The inbound Kennedy slowing down between River Road and Canfield Road. Also pretty heavy between Central and Fullerton, and again between Division and the Burns Circle Interchange. O'Hare to downtown, 35 minutes. From the junction takes 21. Outbound lanes from Pulaski to Canfield is heavy. Downtown to the junction, 12. To O'Hare, 31. Express lanes are okay. Outbound on the Eisenhower from Post Office to Mannheim is 23. To Thorndale takes 36. Stevenson heading outbound. Lakeshore Drive to the Tri-States, 30 minutes. To 355 takes 40 minutes. Inbound Dan Ryan heavy between the Stevenson and the Circle, 19 minutes, 95th to downtown. Tonight, 29 and windy. Tomorrow should be 61 and windy. Currently, it's 36 degrees. Next update in 15 minutes on AM 560, The Answer.
For 30 years, the Ayn Rand Institute has been on the front lines of the culture wars, introducing millions of students to Ayn Rand's books and ideas, educating young intellectuals who now teach at universities around the world, and speaking out in defense of free speech, free markets, free minds. You can join their battle for reason, individualism, and capitalism here in Chicago and around the nation by making your contribution today at AynRand.org/support. That's AYNRAND.org/SUPPORT.
Somewhere in America, at just this moment as you sit listening to this radio show, there is a young person waiting to discover Ayn Rand's novels, waiting to have his or her life changed by the beauty of Ayn Rand's art and the logic of her ideas. Through ARI's Free Books to Teachers program, we have delivered more than 3 million copies of Ayn Rand's books to schools in every state. You can help us reach young minds today. Make your tax-deductible contribution now at AynRand.org/support.
I'm Nick Soboleski, a SelectQuote agent with a true story that could save you hundreds of dollars a year. A woman named Linda just called. Her husband, Ray, has a $300,000 group life insurance policy, but is changing jobs and can't take it with him. Well, I impartially shopped the highly rated term life insurance companies we represent and found Ray, who is 41 and takes medication to control his cholesterol, a 10-year, $500,000 policy, for under $26 a month. That's almost twice the coverage for less than half of what he had paid. If SelectQuote hasn't shopped for your life insurance, you're probably paying too much.
For your free quote, call 1-800-467-1443. That's 1-800-467-1443. 1-800-467-1443. 866-467-1443 or go to SelectQuote.com. We shop, you save. Get full details on the example policy at SelectQuote.com/commercials. Your price can vary depending on your health, issuing company, and other factors not available in all states.
Intrigued, inspired, and possibly even angered. Welcome back to the Yaron Brooks Show on AM 560, The Answer.
It's now in vogue all around the world to raise the minimum wage. Why? Because inequality is a problem. Inequality is going to kill us. Inequality is destroying the economy somehow. And the solution to that is to try to raise the bottom. It's to try to raise people's wages. Now, historically, wages go up when productivity goes up. As you increase your level of productivity, whether it's because you've increased your skills or because of introduction of new technologies or because of the deployment of capital, which allows you to increase your productivity, your wages go up as you can produce more per hour. But what the government does with the minimum wage is it says, to hell with that. We're going to artificially raise your wage. Whether you've increased your productivity or not increased your productivity, we're going to raise your wage. Now, what impact does that have? Well, I want to quote here from Paul Krugman. Yes, yes, Paul Krugman, the former economist. But I want to quote you, from, not from his New York Times column, where he doesn't act like an economist at all. And it is, you know, he gives a poor imitation of an economist. But no, I want to quote for you from Paul Krugman when he actually wrote economics years ago, about 15 years ago or so, maybe more. And he wrote about the minimum wage. And this is what he had to say about the minimum wage. So what are the effects of increasing the minimum wage? He asks. Any Econ 101 students can tell you the answer. And he's right. The higher wage reduces the quantity of labor demanded and hence leads to unemployment. This is simple stuff, guys. If you raise a price artificially, you make it more expensive, then people want less of it. If you raise a price, demand for that good goes down. If you raise the price of unskilled labor, that's people who earn the minimum wage, then people will demand less of that. The higher wages reduces the quantity of labor demanded and hence leads to unemployment. Minimum wage increases lead to unemployment. Now, he says, he admits in this thing, he says, well, there's some confusion, you know, it's hard to show this empirically because the studies are complicated and there's a lot going on. And it's hard to, but he says, look, it's a done deal. There's no question that this is right, right? Right? That minimum wages increase unemployment and that the only rationale for increasing minimum wages is political, And it is. It's this bogus notion that there's an inequality problem and we need to solve it at all costs, including increasing unemployment among teenagers. Including increasing unemployment among teenagers, which is what would happen. So it turns out that of teenagers employed, like almost 25% make the minimum wage, right? So if you raise the minimum wage, those are the people who are going to be fired. So workers age 16 to 19, almost 25% of them make the minimum wage. And if you raise that minimum wage, they'd be fired. Now, some of those 16 to 19s are middle-class kids who are just working on the side while they're doing something else, maybe going to college, maybe while they're in high school. And if they lose their jobs, you know, it's not that big of a deal. It's a big deal to them. But it's not that big of a deal. But a lot of those kids are college, high school dropouts or might be struggling to finish high school while they are working. A lot of these kids are inner city kids. Indeed, many of them are minority kids, right? Black or African-American kids are the largest number in terms of percentage that get the, you know, that earn the minimum wage. So if you want to increase it, you're basically going to increase the unemployment of black 16 to 19-year-olds. Now, that's perfect in Chicago, right? That's all you need. In Chicago, where you already have a huge unemployment rate among exactly that population, By raising the minimum wage, you'll get even more unemployed people in that population. Young men who are black and young women who are black. Actually, women, there are more women who get the minimum wage than men. But really, is that what you want to do? Is that what you want to do? And look, there's some economic studies, there's some empirical studies that are ambiguous about the effects. But every time somebody actually takes a comprehensive look at the impacts of the minimum wage on unemployment, the conclusion is always the same. Raising the minimum wage increases unemployment among young, poor kids. And they talk about it. They say, even those who support the increasing the minimum wage, say, look, they're trade-offs. They just think the trade-offs are worth it. That is, some people make more money and other people make zero. And they say it's worth it because the people make more money, they somehow have more social utility than the people making zero. I hate that kind of analysis. We trade off some people's rights for other people's rights. We, the central planner, we, the philosopher kings, we, the bosses, will decide who will be employed and who will not be employed, who will get money and who will not get money. And if the trade-off is justified from a public whatever perspective, then we do it. That is not the kind of country the Founding Fathers envisioned. We were supposed to be a country that protected the rights of all individuals, that didn't play trade-offs between different groups, different pressure groups. There is no pressure group. There is no of black teenagers. They don't vote. They're too young, and they're uninterested. So nobody cares about them. Nobody cares about them. So we price them out of the economy. We price them out of a job. Who cares? But, you know, those unions, they care. And they vote. And they'll get more money. And they're older. So we'll give them at the expense of the young kids. Now, that is despicable in my view. But that's the trade-off these economists and politicians want. We'll be right back.
When The Fountainhead was first published more than 70 years ago, Ayn Rand's bold literary vision and groundbreaking philosophy of individualism captured the world's attention. Initially rejected by 12 publishers as too intellectual, the novel became an instant classic and continues to provoke heated debates. What motivates a creative thinker? Is it a selfless desire to benefit mankind, a hunger for fame, fortune, and accolades, the need to prove superiority? Or is it a self-sufficient drive to pursue a creative vision independent of others' needs or opinions? Ayn Rand addresses these questions through her portrayal of Howard Roark, an innovative architect who, as she puts, struggles for the integrity of his creative work against every form of social opposition. It's also the story of his love affair with a woman who seeks to defeat him. The Fountainhead is as relevant today as it was when Rand first penned it. The novel was also a personal landmark for Rand. In Howard Roark, she presented for the first time the uniquely Ayn Rand hero, man as he could be and ought to be. Order your copy today in Amazon.com.
Raj Shah, host of Secure Retirement Radio, Chicago's safe money specialist.
We are going to manage a portfolio to the extent where every single month you know and you feel confident that no matter what market it is, that you don't need to play the guessing game and time the market, because it's not timing the market, it's time in the market.
Tune in for Secure Retirement Radio with Raj Shah, Chicago's safe money specialist. Sunday mornings at 7 here on AM 560, The Answer.
Hey, Steve Harvey here. Now, I've been told I know a thing or two about surveys, but I was really interested to learn the answers the Illinois Emergency Management Agency gave when asked to name the top five items every Illinois family needs to have in their home's emergency disaster kit. Water, non-perishable food, a weather radio, and of course, a first aid kit. There's no need for a family to feud over what to include in your kit. Get the answers at ready.illinois.gov.
Sponsored by the Illinois Emergency Management Agency, aired in cooperation with the Illinois Broadcasters Association and this station.
Yaron Brook, executive director of the Ayn Rand Institute, speaks to audiences around the world, promoting Ayn Rand's ideas in talks and books. Now, he's on your radio, here on AM 560, The Answer.
So I'm in a campaign. I'm in a campaign to challenge these ugly ideas, these ideas of envy, distrust, the idea that we should resent people who have wealth and we should be willing to confiscate that wealth, to do whatever we need to do in order to take it away from them. not even to give it to those who don't have wealth, but just to knock him down. And I'm here to fight against the idea that the only way to help people who are in poverty, ambitious people who want to rise up, is by giving them stuff, is by handing them stuff. Because it's not. The best thing for our country, the best thing for every individual in our country, poor, rich, middle class, or undefinable, which is my favorite, is freedom. What we need is freedom. The poor, if you raise the minimum wage, you're not giving them freedom. You're killing them. You're institutionalizing a whole group of teenagers into poverty who will never have a chance, never have a chance at the American dream. In the name of the evils of inequality, they want to create a whole class of people who will never, ever have a chance for anything. And they're willing to do it. It's a trade-off, they tell us. I don't believe in trade-offs. I don't believe in trade-offs. What we need in this country is to maximize freedom. What we need in this country is to maximize opportunity. You maximize opportunity by maximizing freedom, by eliminating the minimum wage. If an employer can get away with paying $3 an hour to somebody and somebody's willing to work for $3 an hour, it's none of my business. None of my business. It probably means that that worker couldn't find a job for more. And this is the one opportunity they have to learn the skills that enable them to rise up and fulfill the American dream, to be independent, which is what the American dream is about. It's not about any particular level of wealth. It's about being independent. It's about making enough money to live, to take care of your family, to take care of the people you love, to take care of yourself, to do the things that you love to do. American dream is not about being a billionaire. It's about making enough to live a good life. But for some, it is about being a billionaire. It depends on your abilities, your skills, your willingness to exert yourself, your ambition, how much money, how much importance you place on money. The point is, the American dream is for you to take your life in whatever direction you want. Without a bunch of politicians and academics and people who want to destroy telling you how to live your life and what's acceptable and what's not and what kind of trade-offs we're going to make. We're going to take a little bit of freedom from you and we're going to take a little bit of freedom from over there and we're going to mush them all together and give some money over here. We're not increasing anybody's freedom. We're only decreasing. Trade-offs never increase freedom. They only decrease it. They wipe it out. So this minimum wage is a huge issue. It's an important issue. It's stupid economics. I quoted you from Paul Krugman, who said it's stupid economics because all it does is raise unemployment. But more than that, is an illustration of the central planners' willingness to manipulate the economy for some greater good. But in the end, when you give people the power to manipulate our lives for the greater good, we all suffer. We should fight the minimum wage at any level. We should fight it institutionalized because of the poor people who are going to suffer because of it, because of the business owners who are going to go out of business because of it, because all of us will have to pay higher prices, and because it's wrong to force people, wrong to coerce them. You're listening to the Yaron Brook Show.
This has been the Yaron Brook Show with your radical for capitalism host, Yaron Brook. Keep the discussion going. Log on to AynRand.org, your portal to the Ayn Rand Institute. Learn how to apply Ayn Rand's principles in your own life. And make sure you tune in next Saturday afternoon at 4 for another hour of dynamic Ayn Rand discussion. The Yaron Brook Show on AM 560. The Answer.
The Ayn Rand Institute campus is an exciting online destination offering free e-courses on Ayn Rand and her revolutionary philosophy of objectivism. Whether you recently picked up your first Rand book or have been reading her novels and nonfiction for years, ARI Campus has something for you. On campus, you'll discover a variety of multimedia courses covering Rand's literary classics.